The following episode of FOFOP is classified MA. It contains some coarse language, some nudity, drug references, a sex scene, time travel, terrible Batman impersonations, a Charlie Clausen pronounced Clausen-shaped hole, and mild coarse language. FOFOP advises that the program is not suitable for persons under the age of 15, and minors must be accompanied by an adult guardian or priest. This is John Deake speaking.
There hasn't been any great advances in prison rape or space travel.
The Father, the Bun, and the Holy Toast.
Hello and welcome to FOFOP. I'm Will Anderson, and our guest Charlie Clausen this week is the fabulous Ian Bagg. Welcome, Ian.
Hey, thanks for letting me be Charlie.
I know, you're our first Canadian Charlie.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
Yes.
So, I don't know what that means.
You know what you need? You need a Vietnamese Charlie.
Right.
That'll be awesome.
Right, I'm going to get it. Yeah, it's going to be like an international Charlie franchise.
Oh, that'd be good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's right.
Like almost like the Wiggles. Like,
right.
Just Charlie all over the world. Oh.
I love nothing more than that. You must have come across, and I use those words now that I realise what I'm about to talk about. Come across is probably not the right word, but you must have come across the Australian comedic group Puppetry of the Penis.
Oh, yeah. Friendy's the best.
Right.
Yeah.
So Friendy is also, who was in Puppetry of the Penis, is one of those guys that I find this is my favourite thing about him is if you just get into a cab late at night by mistake and there's someone already in the cab, that person will be Friendy.
That's
and he'll be like, "Where are you guys going?"
And that is so true.
Right? He's like, he's got these mysterious powers.
I love my favorite thing about hanging with Friendy is there's always a girl that goes, "Oh, so you are in that DVD?"
Right.
And she goes, "You're the first penis I ever seen." Like, he was the first penis for a lot of girls over there because their parents had Puppetry of the Penis, and they happened to see it when they were 12, 13 years old, so they seen him folding their dick. And it's a weird response of, I love you, but I feel disgusted at the same time.
Oh, my
so,
God.
Yeah, I've had three girls when I've been hanging with Friendy, and they're all about between the ages of probably 20 and 25,
yeah.
Around that age. "Oh, you're the first penis I've ever seen." And then happy, and then sad, and then disgust, and then they leave.
It's like the seven stages of grief,
yeah,
but it's
yeah.
The five stages of Friendy.
It's
because it's like, you know, because he's like gateway cock, isn't he? Like,
right.
I mean, you know,
he's gateway cock.
Because
yeah.
It's like, it's,
yeah.
You know, it's,
yeah.
It's the cock you can see that is acceptable to us.
Yeah.
Because he's kind of doing tricks with it.
Right, right.
It's not like sex cock.
Yeah, it's not hard tricks.
No.
He's still soft, so it's
yeah.
Fine. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's like, these are tricks he's doing with his own hand. It's not like, these are tricks I do in your vagina.
Yeah, 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 yeah. Yeah. It's safe tricks with
right.
The penis, which I guess it's good for everybody. Because if he was doing them while they're hard, it would just be disgusting.
Right. Well, yeah. They'd be much.
Because he'd only do one thing: pointing.
They would be much more complicated tricks.
Yeah, it would be off. It would be a lot more splints involved.
Right. It'd be like when I don't know if you remember this, but when Rubik's Cube had their great success with the cube.
Wow.
Rubik's,
good times.
I mean, Rubik's weren't happy to just keep the cube. Rubik's
right.
Were like, "We've got to fucking Rubik's up other shit."
Yeah.
And I don't know if you remember that.
Did they have like a five-sided one?
Yeah,
or something?
There was one of those. And there was a snake. There was a Rubik's snake. So it was like, you know, it was in kind of triangles and you could turn it into sort of different things and like solve it, and it was like a snake. That's what I imagine an erect style of Puppetry of the Penis would be like, the Rubik's snake.
How did they not sell a Rubik's Puppetry of the Penis snake
right.
For girls to do tricks with?
Right. That's actually a really good marketing idea. If you can go and see Puppetry of the Penis, because that's the thing. Men who go and see Puppetry of the Penis...
We try.
...can go home and try
it. Yeah, girls can.
No. But if you gave them...
Yeah.
That
do you go with that kind of like a... Would it be maybe... I don't know. You know those... It's almost like a slug that you throw on the ground. It's a kid's toy that you
right.
Throw on the ground. Maybe that. It's something
right.
Like that. That's, I don't know. Now I'm all. I gotta get a hold of Friendy.
Yeah, I gotta get some merchandising going. Because that's what comedy is about.
Oh, yeah.
It's about merchandising.
Isn't it? Oh, my God. How many people do you work with that are for features that they have a joke that sells their t-shirt?
I mean, it's amazing to me because that's why I got into comedy, because I really wanted to sell t-shirts.
I couldn't.
I couldn't.
Because all the stands were taken at the beach.
Right. I got rejected for so many Gene's West job internships that I was awesome. Like, I'm getting into stand-up.
I know how to get this out there.
Because that's what a lot of people are like. They're like, well, yeah, a lot of people go, how do you get into acting? Well, I'll do a little bit of stand-up and someone will notice me and I'll get into acting.
Love that.
But for me, I couldn't break into the lucrative t-shirt selling business. And a lot of guys are saying, you know, a lot of guys are coming in through stand-up these days. If you can show you can sell t-shirts on the road, you can...
Or did you have a beer cozy that you couldn't get?
Right.
That is just I love it. I love it. I love when somebody comes up to me and says afterwards, "Do you have a T-shirt to sell?" I'm like, "No."
But you know,
don't you want a CD? Wouldn't that be way better than a T-shirt?
I think stylistically as well, though, there is like, you know, some comics who, you know, have that sort of thing where people just want to share the love and they do want to meet them after the show and they want to be like, you know, and. I get that.
Right.
And I think some comedians are really good at that. They're good at, like, you know, bringing their network with them and their friends with them and that sort of thing. But, like, for me, the time that you least want to meet me is immediately after my show.
Yeah.
Like, guess what I just did? I just told you 70 minutes of the most interesting and funny things that I have thought of in the last year that I have practiced into this. This is it. This is me condensed.
Yeah. You know when you want to meet Grandpa? Right after he's had the heart attack and just brought back to life. Because he's full of energy and all excitement right then. Right. No, he's not tired at all. No, not at all.
I can't string sentences together. It's nothing but...
My signature is different on everything that I've done.
Right.
People are like, I'm like...
But also, I think that with you and I, we both have that thing where, like, because we understand that, like, I think... I'm going to use my analogy is that, like, with performance, I always think that the audience is like, it's like you're surfing,
right?
Like, so you can get good waves, you can get bad waves. But that doesn't mean, like, you know, it's how well you pick up a bad wave that means you're a good comic, right?
But sometimes
you got to know how to, like, you know, work an audience. And sometimes that means you're cajoling them, like, come on, guys, you guys are doing a good job. And sometimes that means, like, shut the fuck up and I'm in charge. And,
yeah,
like,
pound them in the face and then, let them know.
And sometimes I think that if you've got to then sell them t-shirts afterwards, it's a lot harder to be like, I'm in charge, I'm pounding you in the face, you're an idiot, I've destroyed you.
It's more like, hey, how are you?
Hey, so were you fine with that pedophile bit? Want to buy a t-shirt?
Sorry that I told you I was going to fuck your mom.
Right. Want a t-shirt to remember the night I said I was going to fuck your mom?
Yeah.
And she was there?
Here's a t-shirt, I won't fuck your mom.
Yeah, remember I made the fuck your mom joke and then we realized she was here?
So great. I always just thought it was, in my head, it was just like that I... Sometimes I can go out and meet them and sometimes I can't. Like, sometimes I just can't go out there. I don't know what it is. Other times I want to go out there and meet that fucking asshole. And other times I'm just like, that was so much fun. I just want to continue it on and maybe it'll continue on by meeting them.
Right.
But it's, I'm guessing you're just like me. You don't know which wave is going to hit you afterwards.
Oh, and that's the thing. That's why I never arrange anything afterwards. And even if someone hits me up to say, like, you know, after a show, say in Melbourne, if we hang around stage door, will you be coming out to sign something? Or will you be...
Maybe.
That's what I would say. I say, am I?
Yeah.
But the other thing is, you know, like what it's like, sometimes you have another show to go to, and sometimes you have another commitment.
Right.
And you're
like...
I signed on for the show.
Yeah.
I didn't sign on for half an hour afterwards.
It's
like,
great.
Yeah.
It's great. Ah.
Although I was in Alaska, which is how I was reminded to call you to get you on the podcast.
Apologize.
I was backstage and I messaged you the photo, but there's
a great
publicity photo of you that when you started doing stand-up at age 12, apparently, as a chubby little curly-haired boy.
I was delivering papers by the looks of that photo. I was just like, hey, guys, this is my photo if I go missing.
That's what it was like. It really,
oh, you fucker.
Oh, my God. Man, it was straight out of, like, you know, sort of 1960s Americana, maybe late 50s Americana. It looks fantastic.
Yeah, it was good. When I put the phone down.
Right.
It was just one of those things you said, I'm going to put the phone down. I'm going to pretend that never came in.
Do you remember when you would have been last at Coyote Jack's, or I think it was called?
You know what? I actually went last year.
Yeah?
I went last year, and I quite enjoy... Coyote Jack's is okay, but I enjoy the Loon.
Oh, yeah, the Loon. That was a theater.
Yeah, it's a theater. And the guy that runs it's kind of this oddball... Alaskan that you think would be there that brought art to the middle of nowhere.
Right.
And every so often brings a band that he loves, and he has comedy that he
really
likes.
Really good bands.
Yeah, it's crazy.
He got up at the start to, like, he does the kind of intro to the comedy. Like, you know, because it's like, you know, I've invited everybody to my place.
Yeah, yeah.
By the way, and then someone was like, he was naming these really cool bands that were coming to town, like Primus was coming to play out.
Has somebody cool.
And someone yelled out, like, from the audience, they were like, what about the Red Hot Chili Peppers? And he was literally like, I talked to their guys, we couldn't get them. And it's like, it's like a town meeting almost. And he's like,
that's so funny.
Like, I talked to the Chili Peppers guys.
It's a little South Park, right? Down. It's almost a little bit like South Park, that whole place. Yeah, yeah. And then the two guys that actually run the stand-up, they're like out of their trees.
Right.
And the whole town kind of mocks them.
Right.
And it's kind of cool.
It's brilliant.
Yeah, it's great.
Because they run, like, I mean, the reason the whole scene works is that these two guys essentially have, like, carried this scene on their backs and gone, we're making this a scene.
Yeah.
And we're going to bring people up, and the rooms are always, like, full because they...
Always full.
You know, they run it well.
12 times, maybe, no, maybe 10, because I think they take some summer dates off.
Right.
Because up there, people don't want to go inside.
Well, this was the last of their run.
Oh, so it was the end? Yeah, I couldn't remember if it was now or June when they stopped. Yeah. But then they continue the concerts outside. They have them out in the outside, these outdoor concerts. Yeah, it was great. I went up and like...
Yeah, Bill Maher's going up there to perform in like the outdoor amphitheater next to the loon. Like, it's ridiculous.
Yeah.
Like, I'm like, Bill Maher's going to be up here like doing a stand-up gig when it's fucking 24 hours of sunshine.
Yeah.
Outdoors in this like natural amphitheater. I'm like, that's fucked up and fun.
Yeah. And there's going to be a moose walking by at some point because I've seen, every time I've been up there, I've seen some sort of wild animal. And you have to go up in the middle of winter when the tires freeze while you're in the venue and you come out and get in the car and it feels like you're going away on squares because they're frozen square.
My favorite thing was I got in the car on the first day and the windscreen was cracked. And I said, oh, what happened to your windscreen? And he just looked at me like, oh, no, that's what happens to windscreens here. He said, because there's gravel all over the roads because they have to put gravel on the roads because of the snow and the ice and stuff.
Yep.
And he said, you get one little thing, it's so cold, your windscreen's
cracked. Smashes right across,
He said, everyone's windscreen's cracked. Then I'm looking around, I'm going, everyone's windscreens are cracked.
And then they just do it in the summer, they get rid of it, and then it just all happens again.
Maybe you guys shouldn't have windscreens.
Maybe you should come up with a better glass.
Better glass.
Yeah. Maybe go to the hockey rink and see what they use not to smash it in with the pucks. Maybe that one might be the idea.
But they don't do that. They just
Go to that, like, it's like an oil refinery. It's called the Refinery and Ice.
No.
North Pole.
No, I did a North Pole gig, but I did another bar.
You didn't do the refinery?
No.
Oh, that's so sad.
Oh, really?
Yeah, you would have met the MSA. Oh, it's amazing.
Is it mostly men?
Mostly men, but the women that hang out. What do they say about Alaska? The odds are good, but the goods are odd. Yeah. So, and it's very... Some of the toughest women you'll ever talk to. Yeah.
I must admit that it was funny because, like, you know, a lot of it's very modern, and I don't mean to, like, you know, paint it like it's all completely backwards, because it's not. And the gigs, like,
the hotel's not modern.
No, the hotel, honestly, it is only one bear's head on the wall away from being a hunting lodge.
I call it Sophie's Choice.
Right. I was Skyping someone in Australia and I was telling them about, like, you know, I was telling about the wonders of Alaska, and I'd seen a moose and I'd seen a beaver, and, like, you know, the ice was melting on the rivers, and then they just looked in the background at my hotel room and went, still don't wish I was there.
Yeah. Are you in a tent? That's what they must have thought. Oh, it's just, it's brilliant, huh?
Yeah.
You have to go up the winter because you do actually go dog sledding. That, like, everybody takes you to do something.
Right.
That's what's great about it. They all want to take you and show you their things. Some people you're like, nah, just don't want to. No, I don't want to try deer with you. You just don't seem like, I don't know if it's deer looking at you. So, yeah.
Yeah, I've seen Deliverance.
Yeah. And it's interesting because I went dog sledding and I had no idea people lived. Like, he basically lives in a doghouse. That's how small his place. And then there's just dogs everywhere. And you're like, what is this?
Right.
Great. Well, I'm coming home with mange that can't be cured. I have no idea.
He's essentially that's where crazy cat women, the opposites of them.
Like, crazy
dog guys.
Yeah.
And they go out to Alaska and they live with their dogs.
Yeah, but they hoard outside.
Right.
Like, it's not... it's bizarre.
So I was having breakfast one morning, and this was the moment where, you know, where you're like, okay, well, not everyone here is as modern as other people. I had an iPod, like, mini, just like a little iPod Nano or whatever they're called, like, you know, one of those mini iPod things. which I took out at breakfast because I was having breakfast by myself and I was listening to something. But I hadn't turned it on yet. Like, I was just putting the earbuds in when I heard the woman at the next table exclaim, like, what is that? Is
no
that,
way.
Is that an iPod of some kind? Like, she was amazed by this tiny iPod. I was like, it's an iPod. It's the most popular device in the entire world.
I'll bring some up next
time. That's what I'm selling after my gigs.
Oh, man.
Look, I'm not selling t-shirts, guys, but I am selling tiny iPods.
And you guys, you can put stuff inside. Right. How does a record fit in there? You know what the greatest part about that area is? That there's a huge Air Force base and I think an Army base. So these guys get sent to Iraq and Afghanistan from the coldest place in the world.
Yep.
How shitty must that be? Because you're just always trying to stay warm, and all of a sudden you're in Iraq trying to stay cool.
It's not the ideal situation.
No, not at all. And I was just like, maybe this shouldn't be the first place. You should maybe buffer it a little bit. Maybe send them to New York first, and then down to North Carolina, and then over to Iraq.
I would tell you a not funny but interesting statistic about Alaska, about Fairbanks, Alaska, and that town. In 2011-2012, they had the highest spike in HIV transmission of anywhere in America.
One guy.
And it was like a couple of, you know, army guys who were like, you know, fucking around all over the place up there, and HIV went through the roof.
Oh, man. Yeah. And they finally got some skinny girls there.
Right.
Sorry.
No, I was glad that that didn't put you off. You said the thing about moose being everywhere, and that was the thing where I was like, because I went and talked to some kids at a school. Like, they were doing a stand-up comedy course, so they invited me in, and they all did their, like, routines, and I would, like, give them feedback on their routines.
So that, what was your feedback? Not everybody's going to understand moose hunting.
Right. Like, you know what? To be honest, the great thing was they were kids from 13 to 15, and their subject matter was more diverse and more interesting than you would see on a random open mic night of people who were, say, 18 to 24 who were doing
their first gig. Why do you think that is? Do you think that's because they're still being educated, and honestly, the most people that do open mics are crazy, and there's a very hard, small core that has actually got a sense of humor and has a broad view of the world. Mostly people that do stand up are, it's, they can do it because the only skill they need to do is talk and have enough balls to walk on stage.
Right.
I think, do you think that has anything to do with it?
I do think it does. I do think there's an honesty in kids as well, though, where because they basically, the what they've been taught, which I thought was really good, was just talk about whatever you find most important at the moment. Like, you know, so...
Oh, that's cool.
So they'd got good advice. You know, they'd basically been told, it's important to find your voice. Like, before they've done a gig,
they're
13 years old, and they've got the, look, the most important thing is to find your own individual voice. But so they did, and so that meant that, like, one kid was talking about his idiot brother, but the next kid was talking about wearing glasses and being nerd, and then the next kid was talking about, you know, yeah, whatever was interesting to him, so yeah, moose or whatever, right? And some of them were really, really good, but I was asking them about, yeah, they were talking about cliches about there, like moose and all that sort of thing, and they were asking me about Australia. See, they think that, like, kangaroos in Australia are like moose there,
right?
That if you are having a gathering, a kangaroo will rock in.
Right.
Did you have that thought when you first... Because you've been going to Australia for ages now, but did you have any of those sort of, like... Did you think you were going to see a kangaroo when you came to Australia?
Yeah, of course, yeah. Right. But, but then, of course, they took us to some golf course where there were kangaroos that would come up on the golf course. I'm like, this is great! It was more koalas. I think it was koalas, like... Really? You just can't go someplace and pet them?
Right.
That's what that blew my head up. Like, I was just, because everywhere in Canada, like where I grew up in Canada is up near Alaska.
Mm-hmm.
And when people came to see us, we'd take them to the dump and there'd be bears.
Right.
You know what I mean? So I figured it was that easy.
Right.
So, but yeah, I don't know. The funny part about Australians is that everybody thinks that it's so small.
Right.
So they're like disappointed when they get to Australia. Like, really? I just can't go to the Great Barrier Reef while I'm in Sydney?
Right.
Yeah, I think that's what it is. Not so much the animal wildlife. Whereas in Alaska, I think when everybody thinks they're going to go there, they're just going to see meth heads and dog sleds.
Right.
So, yeah. I love the fact, did they tell you anything about suicide there?
No.
Because of the sun. Because the sun never comes up and then it never goes down.
Yeah.
And
it's very all or nothing.
Yeah, it's
it's very all or nothing.
It's the best of times. It was the worst of times. Right. Yeah. I said, I bet you there's a lot of suicide in the winter here, because that would drive me insane. Right. Like, no, it's actually in the spring when all the sun is out, because your problems never go away now.
Ah.
So, yeah.
Right. I can imagine that, though. Yes. It would be very, like, even the guys were saying to me that you take those winter months to do things like you don't feel guilty about staying indoors and watching DVDs or whatever, because you don't really have any choice.
Yeah, you have to.
I was like, I've never really thought of that. Quite like the idea of having no choice.
Yeah, it's okay to go to the movies at 2 in the afternoon because it's already dark.
Right.
Yeah.
So it's like being a stand-up comedian.
Yeah, exactly. I remember when I first moved to Los Angeles, I wouldn't go to a matinee movie.
Because
I was like, I got to take advantage of this weather.
Yeah.
The weather's nice. And then after the second year, I'm like, we're going to a noon movie. I know it's going to be the same tomorrow.
It'll be the same when we went in.
Yeah.
It'll be the same when we come out.
It's going to be okay.
It'll be the same tomorrow.
Yeah.
We don't have to take advantage of those 3 days.
Maybe an earthquake. That's it. Yeah.
It's very interesting. When you're doing comedy, I think you have, because you always, there's a million things that you think affect why people are coming out that night.
Right.
It's too sunny, people won't come out.
Right.
It's raining, people won't come out.
Yeah.
You know, whatever it is.
Yeah.
But there are certain cities where I think those things
There's definitely some places where weather affects.
Yeah. In Sydney, like, if it's raining and people can come another night, they will come another night. Because they're like, fuck that, it won't be raining for long. Like, you know, I'll come another night. I don't want to go out in the rain. Whereas in Melbourne, if it rains, people are like, well, if we didn't go out when it rained,
we're going to stay at home.
We're just going to stay at home all the time.
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
You know, they kind of have a different attitude.
Why do we buy boots? Because we can go out in the rain.
Right.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, it's like LA. I mean, you know this, but I've noticed this in the last few years coming here. It's like when it rains here, everyone forgets how to drive.
But they also put storm watch on the TVs. They're like, it's just raining.
It's just rain.
It's not storm. Meanwhile, there's like a tornado in Texas and people are being killed. But it's just normal rain here.
Right.
People are all over the road. Do you think it has anything to do with the fact that because it doesn't rain, there's oil on the road, so people are slipping and sliding more? I have a feeling that's what it is. Like, the roads have a gleam on them.
Yeah, but here's the thing. They're driving like they're in the Fast and the Furious 7. Do you know what I mean? Like, they're all over the place because they're just, they don't know how to drive.
You know why
they're
doing that? You know why they're doing that? They're like, Paul Walker and Vin Diesel can't be cast again.
Right.
I better try to audition for that movie. Oh, they're cast again.
Right. Because it is a Hollywood story. You can imagine it's like the model being found in the Pinkberry. It's like, how did you find the guy for Fast and the Furious 19? Wow. It rained in Los Angeles one morning.
And I seen a guy slide around a corner. Everything's an Archie comic.
So when did you move to Los Angeles? How long have you been out in this part of the world?
2001.
Right.
I was in New York from 95 to 2001, just before things went crazy there. I had some sort of premonition, I guess. No, I didn't.
You got the word?
I got the word.
You were one of the...
You know, you live near a mosque, you're going to hear things.
Yeah. you were doing some open mic nights at the mosque at the time.
I had my little blanket. That was kneeling too. They called me.
They were like, we don't have any money for the gig, but we do have some information you might find handy.
This might be worth it. All right, I'll take it.
Yeah.
Keep it clean. I love it. That's probably about how crazy of God is. They're suicide bombers, but they want things kept clean at the same time.
Right. Right. Did you see, by the way, that the Boston bomber, the one who survived, the brother who survived, he now has like a big, he's like the Justin Bieber of terrorism. Like, there's all these girls online who are like, you know, they want him freed, and they're like, you know, getting tattoos about, you know, freeing him, and they're quoting his tweets as like,
you know, I just don't want a daughter. I'm hoping, you know, my son will get into a fight and I'll have to deal with him to deal with his anger. But if you got a daughter, she just falls in love with some guy that blew up a running race and you're like, oh, you're going to have to deal with that. Or then you put her into gymnastics to keep her busy and then she turns into a stripper because gymnastics didn't turn out. It just, that's why you don't want a daughter. It just doesn't, it never works out. Well, good luck. Good luck to those girls.
Ian Bagg's parenting book will be out for Christmas.
Take that, Gaffigan. I know what I'm doing.
It's very much like the one child policy in China. policy. It's like, yep. You probably want a boy.
Boys only. Girls should just be in a field.
It is weird that I wonder where that comes from. That I mean, I guess that people love a bad boy, but you know, you hear about those, you know, serial killers, and they always get these like groupies. Is it the? Because I think that much like we were talking about, you know, puppetry of the penis being like gateway cock.
Right.
I feel like there is a safety in. I always think this because, you know, there was a controversy in Australia when One Direction toured.
Right.
And like, you know, like there was teenage girls with signs like One Direction, show me your one erection and stuff really? Like that. And there was a bit of like, oh no, these are like teenage girls. Should they really have these signs?
Right.
But most of the debate that centered around that was that it's actually a very safe way. You'd much prefer your daughter to be having a sexual awakening to the safety of the boys from One Direction that they're never actually going to have sex with, rather than Gary out the back of the high school.
At least aiming high.
Right. Yeah. But it's also safe. It's not happening.
Right, right, yeah.
Whereas, like, if they're real-life experimenting, then... So there's some argument of that. And I guess that there's a safety in... You know, like, the girl who has the gay best friend, it's like that she's in love with, where it's right. like, this is safe because there's something about the actual sexuality that scares right. me.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I kind of feel like the person who falls in love with the prisoner has a bit of that about them. Like, yeah, I want to be in love with a man,
those ones that actually
but I don't want to actually have to...
Right. I can enjoy him, but I think there's also 3/4 of those women are actually trying to make an effort to meet him.
Right.
That's what concerns me.
They're trying to break into prison.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, they're going there, and I just want to talk to him. He's not allowed to talk to strangers yet? Yeah, the trial hasn't happened. He's not allowed to talk to strangers yet. You know, right. they're all outside, yeah. they're all outside the prison.
The guy just got arrested 30 minutes ago. How did you...
How did you know he was here? My dad works for blah, blah, blah. But there's so many... I know... I just read an article a couple days ago about this woman that figured... it was in New Jersey. They had a big standoff last week. This woman started dating this guy who was a pedophile, but she figured she could help him even though she had kids. Did you read about it? It was a big standoff.
Oh my God, no.
They were held hostage.
So hang on.
Days.
You're saying that this woman hooked up with a guy who was a pedophile.
Yeah.
And she thought that she could...
Fix him.
Fix it.
And he would be fine because...
And you're saying that with those ingredients, something went wrong with that master plan?
What I'm saying is they had no idea that cake and meat didn't go together.
Right.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But that's my concern about these girls that love.
Right.
That they think they can fix. Oh, he's cute.
Right.
I
can fix him.
Yeah, you know what? Just because somebody's cute doesn't mean they're mentally and, you know.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. So. And you know what? Most men are fixer-uppers.
Oh.
So, like, if you need a project, don't worry. Whatever.
There's one coming along. Yeah. It's like DIY. Yeah. There's another show in a second.
One who hasn't blown someone up still has a range of issues you can deal with the rest of your life.
He wants to blow people.
It's fine.
He wants to blow people up. That's a real fixer.
That's another issue. That's a definite fixer.
That is almost as bad as a terrorist. You're not going to fix that.
There's some religious courses that you can involve them in. I did. I wish I could remember the details of this, but I was reading a great article recently about one of the. When I say a great article, I don't mean it was actually about horrible things, but it was about one of those religious courses where you know they cure people for being gay.
Oh,
but it was like quite a famous one where they. What had happened was essentially it just ended up being like fuck club for men, like you know, because it'd be all these guys who were like, you've just invited a whole bunch of like guys who are like, I like having sex with other men, but I feel like there's something wrong with it. Hey,
let's all go swimming and then we'll feel guilt afterwards.
Right. I seem to have a lot in common with you.
At the end, did they just disband and
make
it into
The actual guy who was in charge of it ended up having like an affair with another man again. Like he was the guy who was like, I can cure you.
Is it Bruno? I think
cock.
It's Bruno or it's Ali, the Ali G show. Who's the other character that he did?
Borat.
Does he not go to one of those places and talk to a guy and it's obviously that this guy's still gay and he's trying to cure people?
I think it was Bruno.
I think it was Bruno.
Because that was
he's the
gay character.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
I'm not sure that I made it all the way through Bruno.
It took me a long time.
Right, yeah.
Bits and pieces.
Yeah, right. Sometimes just...
That's the great part about having Showtime and HBO. You can just go back and forth between movies. So I've combined a bunch of different movies in my head, you know. Like, I've started one and ended with... the best way to make Fast and the Furious is if it combines with Rushmore.
Right.
So
yeah. Everything essentially can yeah. be like a Rodriguez Tarantino film.
Yeah.
Where like the first half is one that's and then so, the second half
that's
is
great.
The-
that is oh. That's how we learned how to write by right. having a remote control.
I like the idea too that you can actually once you've watched a movie enough times. The thing is that a movie ends really because a movie's not a whole story. Like any story right. is not a whole story, right. really, normally, right?
Yeah.
Unless it's about like I guess from birth to death, but even it's only that person.
Benjamin Button.
Benjamin Button was the whole story.
Yeah.
But apart from Benjamin Button,
right.
Mostly it's just a snapshot of like a part of that time.
Right.
So realistically, you could end that movie wherever you want. And there are some movies that I, now that I've watched the whole movie, if I watch it again, like I'm just like, I know, I'm just editing this movie where I think it ends now.
That's
like, I'm happy to watch the third Lord of the Rings film up until the final battle scene. But I'm like, fuck Frodo on the boat. I don't give a shit. The movie finishes with the battle.
That's so great.
Right? Or Shaun of the Dead. I can watch that now and enjoy Shaun of the Dead, and I stop before his mum dies, and it's a happy ending. I
spoiler that's so alert. Smart. If you haven't that's seen so Shaun smart. Of the Dead. I love the way you edit your own movies. That is so great. What if you did it on the first round, or like for the first run through? If you just picked where you wanted it to end, you're like, you just got to a point, just, I'm out! Just walked out of the movie theater.
Yeah, and just like, you go, your friends are like, I'll tell you what, I saw her out of The Crying Game. It's about a lovely woman. See how serious she is, but it's a lovely woman.
She goes for a walk through a field, right. And I don't know what happens.
I saw this great movie where Bruce Willis talks to a kid.
Yeah.
It was great.
He's on a flight.
Right. What do you do when you're on the road? Because how much do you tour? Because you come out to Australia a bit, but do you tour a lot in general?
Like, yeah, road? Probably about 45 weeks a year.
Yeah, right. Yeah. So a lot of the time.
Yeah, yeah.
So. And is that mostly in America and Canada?
I'll go anywhere. Yeah, I'll go. It's mostly in America. I would say it's my main chunk. Australia, and then a little bit of Canada, and then wherever else somebody wants to book me. But
right.
I'm one of those guys that if I get offered a gig and it seems interesting and they put the right price behind it, it doesn't have to be an exorbitant fee. It has to be the right price.
Right.
I'll go. Like last year I went to Bangladesh.
So hang on. So run me through that. Who do you play to? No, I wasn't going to do the classic comedian thing and go,
who books that?
Yeah, how did you get that? Yeah. How did you get Bangladesh?
No, that's awesome.
Bag knows someone. Bag knows someone.
It was a guy that a Bangladeshi, I think a guy that was over here who took, he was working for Hewlett Packard.
Yeah.
And they said, you should take some classes while you're here. One of the classes he took a comedy class.
Right.
And it was to talk to Americans. He ended up enjoying comedy.
Right.
So
he put on a comedy night? Was that what it was?
He built himself a comedy club in a basement because they don't have bars there.
Right.
So he has a basement suite that he has a comedy club in. And then he
even in Bangladesh, comedy clubs are in basements.
Yeah, and a brick wall.
Right.
That's what's great about it. And it's Naveed's Comedy Club,
right.
which is just great, right?
Yeah.
Just starts out with a bang.
Right.
And he's brought over three or four guys, and he's put them into theaters. And it's when I say theaters, into bigger venues.
Yeah.
And it was great. It was mostly locals, and then there was a couple people over there working for different companies. So it was great.
So when you say it was mostly Bangladeshis, whatever.
I think I think they might be Bangladeshis. I might know.
I think Bangladeshi. Oh, well, you know what? I like the sound of Bangladeshi. So right. when I say it. You can know that I'm only being positive,
right?
Because I'm saying it.
I'm not putting them down. No,
it's a beautiful word to say, and
it
should be Bangladeshi.
Yeah,
yeah.
I could Bangladesh every day.
Right, exactly. I'd be proud to be a Bangladeshi.
They should be. No. I don't work in the sweatshops, but other than that, that's good.
So, they are local. So, what do you talk to them about?
Everything, just everything. I just talked to them about. They asked me because it's a very Muslim country. They said, can you keep the sexual talk to a minimum?
Oh yeah.
So okay. I kept. Yeah. That to a minimum, and we talked about everything. We went back and forth.
Do that stuff about being tipped off about 9/11?
Yeah, I was like, "Hey guys, thanks, know your brother." It was bizarre though. It was one of those places that I didn't like. I really didn't research much before I went there. It was one of those. I did my great American thing where I'm just like, "I'll go." All right. And then once I got into the airport, I'm like, "I'm in a third world country." Once you start recognizing things from, hey. This seems a lot like Argo.
Right.
Yeah, you're like, oh, okay, this is interesting. So, and then they're just, hey, can you keep that down? I'm like, okay. And then we go through the town. I'm just driving through from the airport to the town. I'm like, I'm in Slumdog Millionaire. Everybody's begging for change. People's arms are missing. What's going on? And then I look over, and there's a young girl, and she's the most gorgeous thing you've ever seen begging for change. You're like, this doesn't, none of this makes sense. Like, none of it, like, put it in my head. And then I get there, and the white people are there. I'm like, why are there white people here? And I ask them, and they say, they work for Save the Children. And I'm just like, my big thing is, I'm like, when are you going to start? Because I've been outside. And anytime you guys want to walk out, you probably shouldn't be at a comedy show. It's time to go.
Yeah.
So, and then the Bangladeshis love me from saying that to the white people. So, yeah. But it's one of the, you have the same thing. You have the same kind of comedy. You know when you can push a little further.
Right.
You know when you got to pull back, you know, when, yeah. And they were great. And they wanted to talk. They wanted to have a conversation with me, so it was great. We had a good time.
Yeah, good. Where else have you been that's interesting like that?
China.
China?
Yeah, I did.
Hard to... Did they have provisos on what you couldn't talk about in China?
No, and it's interesting because I went with Jim Gaffigan right before the Olympics.
Right.
And so that would have been... Would that have been one or... Would that have been two? So it would have been...
So there was London.
London, and then before that was Beijing. Yeah, so I went just before... Like the year before me and Gaffigan went.
Right.
And I
was... Well, that was a good time to go because that would be a bad time for them diplomatically to lock up a couple of...
A couple of jokes. But at the same time, we had to go to the thing. We got this passport and blah, blah, blah. Or, you know, so... And I'm looking at it as we're in the air, and I'm like, this says tourist visa.
Oh.
And I'm like, this could be interesting. I'm like, don't mention that we're doing shows. Like, don't answer anything. And he's like, okay. So we go through, and we're on a tourist visa, and there were shows set up. And it was really... Like, Shanghai was great.
Right.
And the shows were amazing. Like, it was... We were in a club called Chopsticks, which I thought was the weirdest thing. I was like, are you guys... So even the Chinese get mocked in China? So, you know... But the only thing they were concerned about was I think one of us brought CDs. And I think they were concerned about that. That was... And it was... But other than that, they didn't ask us about anything. But I kept noticing there was translators around. At that show, there was translators. In Bangladesh, everybody spoke English. It was at the show.
That's interesting.
Yeah, so,
having to go to a show with a translator.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, it's hard enough in...
At first, I didn't even know because I just thought they were whispering under their breath. I thought, this guy's so funny.
Yeah, you're like, what the fuck are you talking about? Are you translating?
Okay, right. Quit mocking me. Yeah, so...
I mean, that's good for the ticket price if someone has the...
Yeah, doubles it up. Right. Easy. You double the size of the venue no matter what. So smart. Oh, China. Oh, they know how to work. But Shanghai was great, but Beijing was good, but it was like a lot of business people. And I met this girl afterwards, and I went out drinking with her, and I ended up in some deep, dark, underground like stuff. It was pretty cool.
Oh, what do you mean?
Like just clubs, like just underground like alcohol
clubs. And so is there like a big... And who's in those clubs? Is it like cool young people?
I don't know if they're cool, but it was a lot of young people. It was interesting. It felt like almost like I was... And I don't... Well, like, how do you put those two together? It felt like I was in a Vietnamese movie.
Right.
Like a Vietnam War movie.
Bar that shouldn't exist.
Yeah, exactly.
In the middle of like a...
And the exact lights. You know those lights that they hang? And you're just like, what the fuck? Where am I?
Right.
Yeah, so it was fun. So it was a good time. I got so hammered, I missed going to the Great Wall, though. That's one of the things.
That... And you're now married to a Chinese woman.
Several.
Oh, so you missed the Great Wall.
The Great Wall. I'm just like, we'll be back. Right. I was at that age. It was about, you know, so it was about, I'm just that age. Like, when are we not going to be back in China? We'll have to do this gig again in 2 years.
Right. But I get that.
Yeah.
I went to Rome and didn't go into the Vatican because it was too big a line.
I love that.
I was like, I can't line up.
Oh, my God.
Seriously.
How many Catholics could there be?
So I get that.
We get spoiled, right? Because we go places. Right. And then if you go someplace and they don't take you, like, we usually skip a lot of lines.
Right.
So
absolutely.
So when you don't get taken care of, you're like, I can't be bothered to.
I mean, often that's the interesting thing is, like, sometimes even when you get to the touristy things in your own places, like recently for the Sydney Comedy Festival, and I actually didn't get to do either of these things, but it would have been a good time to do it, which was they had arranged, like, you know, the Harbour Bridge climb.
Oh, really?
Because, like, yeah, the comics are out. They want to do stuff with them.
Yeah.
And so I was like, I was like, oh, I could do that. I live there.
Right.
Do you know what I mean? I can do it any day.
Yeah. You should have done it.
I should have done it already. But I've walked across the bridge just to get to somewhere else. I haven't walked up it.
Just because there was a traffic jam and you couldn't drive.
That's right.
You sons of bitches, yeah.
Yeah, so that's, I mean, you do get to go and see a lot of things. But I've been trying to make a bit more of a point recently to do things again, because I was saying to someone the other day that I feel like last year I was doing so much touring and stuff that I didn't live. You know, I didn't have enough sort of just like I've done stuff and I've been out and about experiencing things.
Trying to find new things.
Right.
Yeah.
So you're not talking about the same shit all the time, you know?
And I'm kind of an information junkie, so I don't mind going and but sometimes you do get next time.
When you say you're an information junkie, what do you mean by that?
I love to go, I'll go on the internet and go on through 8 different news sources from around the world. I'll read Time Magazine, I'll go, I'll be reading, I'll find, just talk to somebody just to learn what they feel about something. I'll go to a museum because I don't, a kid's museum, even though it's not built for me, just to see what's going on, kind of things like that.
That's so interesting. What is your, do you have an area of that you're really passionate about? Is there something that you really like reading about or that you're always passionate about?
No, I'm just anything. Doesn't matter. Some things I'll just stop reading in the middle of it. I'm like, not into this.
Yeah.
I've tried to get through, The Art of War.
Oh, yeah.
I've tried to get through that 3 times and it just burns me every time. I have no idea why, but everybody's like, you gotta read that. I'm like, I just can't fit.
I would have thought though, because I'm not sure that I've actually read the whole thing, but I do remember when I was at university and I was studying something where it was constantly referenced that I thought, I should fucking just go and read this and get my head around it. And I don't think it's a very comedian's attitude to how the world works.
Right.
So I think we've...
I can tell guys that have read it. You know, you'll be talking to me like, this guy's fucking gotten through that book. I gotta get out of here.
Right, but anyone who's gotten through a book and applies it to their life.
Yeah.
That's the thing that I'm like, don't subscribe to any, and I think you get this being, when you say you're an information, because I'm a bit like you. I was once, I think it was a diss. It was meant to be unkind when they said it about me, but I think it was actually pretty true, which was someone was surprised by a bit of knowledge that I had on some topic, and the person that I was with said, that's Will. He knows 3 things about everything and no more than 3 things about anything. Right? So
interesting.
Right. But I think that the second part of that is probably a bit unfair. There are some things
I'd say it's a little bit unfair. But
the first bit I kind of got, which was that I like to just know a little bit, even in things I'm not interested in, I like to know a little bit about them.
Right, so you can not look like an asshole when you walk in the door, like going to Bangladesh without knowing anything. I still knew stuff about Bangladesh, but I didn't research, everything. So,
and you want to learn new stuff as well as you go.
Yeah.
So, but the thing is that I don't think you should subscribe to any one philosophy. This is always my issue. Is like anyone who goes, these are all the rules I need, and I don't need anything else than this.
Religion.
I'd prefer that you read a whole bunch of things and then went, I've changed my mind on this and I've got a bit more information on this and I'll, so anytime anyone reads The Art of War or reads The Secret or reads fucking Eat, Pray, Love or reads, what was that fucking dating
book? Yeah, I know which one,
one where it was all about all these tricks for getting women into bed and
What is that one? Because a guy just told me about that. He was on a guy named Ben from Australia was on a bus,
right?
And he heard this guy talking, and he's talking to a woman, and you read that book, and you're
you're doing it.
He said, "Are you about to do magic?
Right?
Are you about to do a magic trick?" What is the name of that book?
What is it called? It was Jesus Christ. Anyway, you keep talking and I'll go.
I'll keep talking. But how great was it that he caught somebody on a bus, and apparently a woman as well on the bus was like, I thought I recognized that too. And then the guy got mad at them for trying to stop
giving away his for negging. He's negging.
Yeah,
that was one of the terms.
Yeah,
I remember one of the terms was called negging.
What is that book called? It's. But anyways, I'm that guy, and I don't think. I'm always surprised when somebody knows that you know a little bit, and then I like the guy that's mad that you know a little bit.
I don't like the thing where anyone tries to play any sort of game on anyone. Like, you know, any of those people who are into, like, power handshakes.
Yeah.
Anyone who ever... I had a business meeting once, and, like, because I just find that shit hilarious.
Right.
Right? I don't get intimidated by it. I just... It makes me giggle to myself, you know, when someone's trying to do a false power trip on you.
Yeah.
So I had a television meeting with, like, these important TV guys in Australia, and they took me into their office, and they... So one of them basically leaned on his desk. So, like, the desk is a high desk, and he just leaned on it with his cock towards me. Right. One of the other guys stood in the corner with his, like, arms folded.
Right.
And one of the other guys was, like, on a chair behind a desk, but he was, like, in a power position. And then they said, you can sit on the couch. And I sat on the couch, and it was honestly like one of those couches that you sat on and you went down, you went into Narnia. Like, there was goats walking around. That's awesome. Like, it was... And it was obviously...
Guys, am I buying weapons?
Right. And it was like, are you all going to piss on me or something?
Yeah.
Because that's what it was like. They all just had their groins, like, pointed at my face. And, of course, it was meant to be this intimidating, you know...
We've been fucked by Russell Crowe 3 times, and this is not going to happen again.
And but all I could do was, like, giggle to myself, because I just found...
And did they get it? Did they know that you're onto them?
Oh, no, because in that situation, what I then do, because once I understand what's going on... I love nothing more than just naively pretending that I don't know what's going on, because it's so much fun to, like, you know, play along.
Yeah,
As long as you know that everything you're saying in that situation...
Yeah, you know where you're going.
You know where you're going. It's brilliant. It's just brilliant.
That's awesome.
I love it. But you know, people who go with the over aggressive things, like, you know, people subscribe to, is it Ayn Rand? Is that the name of people? I've been stuck with people at parties telling me about, you know, they've just read this book and they're regurgitating everything that's
It's interesting, even because you when we can think of religion, you think whatever it's going to get you through the night, you know what's his face said, and that they need it to survive, right? They just need it because they need something to grab onto. And it's interesting when they grab onto another thing as well, like The Secret, or like that guy that wrote The Secret. That was great how he got a bunch of people into a sweat lodge in Arizona and wouldn't let them out and wouldn't give them water, and a bunch of them died. Like, there's no way that I would ever trust anybody with that, you know. Yeah, I wrote The Secret. Oh, fuck, let me go to a sweat lodge with you, because, like, fuck, it makes no sense at all.
Right. It makes less sense than than you after your gig going, hey, everyone, let's go to a sweat lodge.
Yeah.
Did you enjoy my ideas or not? Oh,
I know. Yeah. I wrote a script once, and you should all go to a sweat lodge with me.
All right. Now, I Googled negging. The game. It was called The Game.
That's hilarious. So we just kept saying The Game.
Yeah.
We kept saying, I'm not playing that game with those people. That game. We just say it like 8,000 times.
Yeah. What was that movie about The Game?
Game.
Where they play that game?
What kind of games do you like?
Yeah.
Do you like checkers? I think that's a great game.
Do you eat duck? It's a bit gamey.
Too gamey. Moose gamey.
Gamey.
Oh, man.
So I'm interested, though, in the when it comes to knowledge, you know, obviously you're a person who has a thirst for knowledge. Did you, were you an educated person? Did you go to university or college, something like that?
I started.
What were you studying?
Engineering. I was going to become an explosives engineer.
Oh, really?
So, yeah.
And is that something that where did that desire come from?
Working in a gold mine.
Right, okay.
Yeah, yeah, I know. I was just like, I want to control this, because the guy that was controlling it really didn't have a grasp on it.
Right.
And we had to dive under trucks and stuff because, he had put too much.
So it wasn't a little too much this time. Right. I'm like, who the fuck are you?
It wasn't your passion in life. It was more your passion for life.
Yeah, it's completely different. My thing with that was, because I grew up in the middle of nowhere.
Right.
This was such... a distant dream to do what I do.
So how were you raised?
By chickens.
Right.
No.
Which was where you first, when they're crossing the road first, yes. You were like, hang on, why are they doing that?
I got to get across.
And a career was born.
Exactly. That's awesome. I was raised, my mom was a nurse from Australia, and okay. my dad was a mechanic from Canada.
Okay.
And they met, and then they moved away because my dad ran a business for my grandfather. My parents moved as far as away as they could without going to Australia. So obviously my parents didn't get along with their parents, either of them.
Right.
So they took me to near Alaska, and I grew up in this little logging Indian village.
Oh.
And it just didn't, education was kind of looked down on, but wit was looked at. Like, that's how you got away with things, with wit. So, and when people say, how is your show? My show is basically based on being in a hockey van, going to play another town, and us sitting and just talking and trying to make each other laugh. That's how, having a conversation and just growing on what's going on in that situation. So, I did arts when I was in school, but growing up in the middle of nowhere in Canada, you probably didn't get the best educators. You know, there are probably one or two. So it was always...
Yeah,
you can use this, but you'll use this in the mine.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So going to university afterwards wasn't called for. What was called for was if you were really going to make the big leap, you were going to go to a technical school and get the top end of a technical. Yep. So I never, ever thought about going to university and chasing what I wanted to chase. I just happened to run into a guy, and he told me how to do comedy. So I moved to Vancouver to go to school, to a technical college to get into engineering. And I went and did an open mic, and that's how this all kind of spun out. And as soon as I tried an open mic, I was like, that's where I got to go. And I just dropped out of school immediately. And then
as soon as you got your first laugh at open mic, you were like, fuck those guys down the mine.
Yeah, fuck those guys.
Fuck those guys.
I'm funny. They don't know what funny is.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. They said to shut up, but I know I should be talking. So little did I know it was because the roof was going to cave in on us. And then I ended up going to acting school in New York.
Right. Okay.
So
that's because I come from a logging town as well. So the town that I'm from in Country Victoria, my parents are dairy farmers, but the town itself, Hayfield, is like a timber town, a logging town.
Oh, really?
So.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
How do you think that affects your worldview, having come from where you came from?
Do you think
it does affect you?
I think it does, and I think you probably feel the same way because you were kind of on the outside of the party because you weren't in a city. So, and you see things and you're like, wow, that's interesting. Never happened here, and it never did. Nothing ever happened there. We got to see you were on the outside of the party looking in and able to tease it. And I think that's also Canada, being as well as Australia, we're on the outside. We're on the outside of America and England, but we can see what they're doing and be able to tease them about it. And they're like, "How did you notice that?" Because we're standing on the outside of the party, and you're pissing into the fire when you think you're pissing into a toilet, but you're not. You know what I mean? So
that status thing is really quite amazing in comedy, because I find that the hardest gigs I ever do are in New Zealand, because it's like that one thing of that's the place where Australia seems like a bully,
right?
Right, suddenly we're America.
That's so...
Fuck!
So...
Yeah.
You guys should have your own ships.
Right.
That's awesome.
Is there anywhere that you have done that you have not been well received? Is there somewhere in the world that it's been hard for you to go, or is it...
No,
I mean, obviously there's
so.
Places that you play that are no, shitty
like,
gigs.
Yeah, shitty gigs, but no, I don't think so. Like, I went to the Middle East and I had good Qatar and Dubai. And
did you do gigs for troops? Is that what you did?
No,
did you...
I did for oil companies. I did it for they had gigs over there, so expats working over there. So I pretended it was oil. But I found them fine. Being in the city, I found them only a couple times. When we were in airports, I found that we stood out the most,
right?
And I felt like security was looking at us a little weird. But in those
so
situations,
you know what it's like to be a brown person,
in America. Exactly. But I wonder if it is brown people feel the same way, because I was like, I don't know if those are real security guards. That's what I'm thinking. I'm like, are they real security guards? Or are they the Taliban?
Right.
That's what I was thinking. And I'm, it was interesting. I'm like, we're just being set up for kidnapping.
Right.
There's no plane on the other side of that door. It's just a box we're going into.
But that is, it's funny, isn't it, when we're challenged by our own sort of prejudice in those situations.
Right.
Because what you're really thinking is probably, I mean, I guess he's probably unlikely, but you know,
yeah,
who fucking knows?
Yeah, who knows, right?
I mean, that was what I was like when I did that first gig in Alaska, when they've driven me out into like an hour and a half out of town into the middle of the wilderness.
Did you do that little bar in the middle of nowhere?
Yeah, near Delta, the little rock cabin bar.
Do you know what that is? That's just the missile defense. That's all like nuclear missiles out there, and those guys take care of those missiles.
Are you serious?
Yeah, that's all it is.
Is that what it is?
That's what it is. That's
my fucking God.
Yeah, you were like around a bunch of nuclear missiles.
That's no wonder they didn't care about smoking indoors.
Yeah, I don't care. Don't smoke outdoors because that's how they set them off. Yeah.
No one told me about the nukes.
Yeah.
Is that right?
Yeah, it's missile defense. Yeah, yeah.
Well, I mean, because I guess, geographically, it's
yeah, like, that's the easiest way to get to it.
Right.
Yeah.
And so all those, like, old hillbillies in the cabin.
And was there, when I was there, there was one Korean guy, one old drunk Korean guy. I'm like, why is that North Korean here? And that made him even, like, laugh even harder. The people that own are really nice, and they got two good-looking daughters. It was bizarre.
Oh, no, it was a fun gig.
Yeah.
Like, I had a really good time, but it was, I did not realize that, you know, but you have prejudice about the way that people look or where you are or what you're, have you gone out much in Australia to, like, you know, because obviously you've played the cities and stuff, but have you gone out into some of the more rural gigs, into the outback?
I did the Pilbara.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, yep. I did some gigs up there, which was really fun.
Mm-hmm.
And this time when I go back in September, I'm doing some, like, Tamworth and some things like that.
Oh, okay.
So, yeah, I'm going out with, yeah.
Tamworth famously have Australia's big country music festival.
Oh, perfect.
It's the...
Will Keith be there?
Yeah, well, maybe.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, it's funny, the Keith thing, because... I mean, over here, particularly when I was in Alaska, that was, it's very interesting where you go in America and which Australians they're interested in.
That's what they're interested in.
In LA, I'll tell you what, Yahoo Serious still gets a lot more mentions.
I'm still... Do you know those twins that do comedy?
Oh, yeah, the Nelson twins.
I'm like, why has nobody made a movie about you being Yahoo Serious's kids?
Young Yahoo Serious kids.
Yeah.
Yahoo Serious, the next generation.
They look so much like... And I think they'd eat that up over here. I'm just like, if I had the money to do it, I would...
You'd reboot the Yahoo Serious franchise.
In a second. And then I'd make that Rubik's Cube cock for Friendly.
Fuck, man, you're like Joss Whedon now. You've got an empire.
And t-shirts. Everybody wants t-shirts.
T-shirts. People love. Ian's going to sell them after the movie.
Before. Before.
Just come out of the start.
Yeah, just before. Look, I'm not going to be able to come up afterwards. Got my own shit going on in my head.
That's it. That's our, you know.
I love it.
That's our time. Ian Bagg, you're coming to Australia, you mentioned.
So. I'll be there in September. You can find it on ianbagg.com. The dates will be up there. I know I'm at the store in Sydney for at least 4 dates. So.
Oh, fantastic.
Yeah, so.
Sydney Comedy Store, Australia's best stand-up comedy venue, I reckon.
Man. Yeah, and the guys there are really nice.
I'll be back there later in the year doing my Goodwill show for a bunch of weeks. Maybe not as many weeks as last time, though, because... I just am not going to be around for as many
weeks.
How many
did you do last time?
9. So,
9 sold out.
Yes. But I don't think we have time for 9 this year. So when they go on
just
sale...
Just getting busier.
Please
come
and see the show. That would be really cool. You can find me on Twitter. It's @Will_Anderson. You on Twitter? You're on Twitter,
yeah,
right?
Twitter @IanBagg.
Of course.
IanBagg.
I contact you through there all the time.
I'm bad
at my phone.
Are you?
I don't know if you'd noticed that because I've done a lot more contact to you on Twitter than on the phone.
Yeah.
What I haven't worked out on my phone, even though I've had it for like 2 months, is how to turn on the running writing. Like because it's an old school phone. So every single message I'm doing, I'm doing
forever,
like,
right?
See? See? Yeah, so.
That's how I do it. You know, when I'm in Australia, I have that same phone, and then this last time I'm like, fuck it. Went out and bought an iPhone 4 and just opened it up, and just because it's just so much easier. So you should do the same thing.
Right, so you think just.
Yeah, just get an iPhone 4 for over here and just. And then use your one, because it's just. It's amazing. And then I tried to use one of those Samsungs. I'm like, nope.
No.
Not happening.
I find people who can change between the iPhone and the Samsung phone, like just by generation, completely fascinating people that I don't trust in any way.
Yeah. I call them autistic.
Choose a fucking side.
Yeah.
You want to learn a whole new system each time?
Yeah. Yeah, it blows my head up. I'm just like, how did you do that?
I freak out when they update iTunes and the fucking podcast moves to a different place. How do you change to an entirely different technology?
I don't like when Twitter gets a new little bird on it.
My God. I have to have a week off work if Facebook redesigns their layout.
That's terrible. Oh, my God. Thanks for having me, brother.
No, it's my absolute pleasure. If you listen to the show on iTunes, please rate it on iTunes. That's what we always ask. We'll see you next time. Bye.